AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Dry conditions in the northern Midwest have left the Mississippi River with exceptionally low water levels. What does that mean for moving this fall's corn and soybean crops? We'll get to know the president of Iowa Farm Bureau and get an update on legislative priorities for U.S. hog producers.
Live from a post-dart party via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we talk low water with Mike Steenhook of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Then we welcome Brent Johnson of the Iowa Farm Bureau. In the final segment, Terry Walters from the NPPC. Right after the news with Clinton Griffiths, we'll catch up with Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Joe, thank you so much. Yeah, so DART worked. It apparently hit its mark. I don't know if it had any impact on the way that the asteroid was traveling, but they did hit their mark. That was an awfully impressive piece of work by NASA, wasn't it?
Yes. I went to bed early last night, and I woke up this morning, so apparently everything went fine.
Yeah, there were no unintended consequences.
Listen, Bruce Willis is on it. Bruce Willis has got this figured out. Didn't we already watch this movie?
I was so disappointed last night that Bruce Willis was not there to high-five everybody when they smashed into that thing.
Just saying. I'm just saying. It seems like an opportunity missed.
It certainly does. Certainly does. How are you, Clinton?
I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well. Good to be here with you, Chip.
Good, good, good. Glad that you are. 53 degrees here this morning in Northeast Iowa. We are headed for our first frost of the year tonight and early tomorrow morning.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to have to zip the bottom of your shorts back on. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to have to go back to long pants.
Yes. Yes, I know exactly what you are saying. And I asked the question out on Twitter, is it going to make any difference? And you know what? Guys are indicating that it will make a difference on how the corn crop finishes if we get a hard enough frost tonight, because not quite to black layer in some areas, a little bit of work to do out there. So got to keep an eye on it. It could take 5, 6, 8 bushel off the top of some of the corn yields out there.
Yeah, and so, they're calling for like mid-20s as far south as like Tama, Iowa. So, I mean, we're looking for some significant freeze out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, buddy, let's get to the rest of the news.
Well, of course, you know, there's some news today. So, you know, I'm happy to be here. Hey, real quick, one thing that we've been watching and we were just discussing, Sweden's reporting explosions at the Nord Stream pipeline under the Baltic Sea. It sounds like maybe now there are 3 leaks, Chip. And, of course, we've been watching some of the markets here, and they seem to be kind of sitting on this news at this point.
Natural gas is actually trading lower this morning. When I saw the news, Clinton, the first thing I did was went to the natty gas market, and I was, you know, you kind of rub your eyes and wonder, geez, is this right? But, yeah, natural gas is trading lower. The initial reports indicate because Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2 were not actually delivering product into Europe, so it's not going to have an impact on the supply right now.
I got you. So let's talk about the Gulf Coast. Hurricane Ian making its way toward Florida, crossing Cuba with sustained winds of 125 miles per hour. The storm now tracking toward Tampa Bay. Could be the worst tropical system to hit there in a century is what they're saying now. Mandatory evacuations are underway for 300,000 people. They've been ordered. 5,000 members of the Florida National Guard have been called up and activated, Chip. So this seems like, you know, obviously a system that we're watching closely. Oh. Probably tomorrow night into Thursday is when we expect to really start seeing some impacts.
Real deal storm here. No question about it. And as it slows down, as it makes its way up the west coast of Florida, the concern is that it will only create a bigger storm surge inland.
Storm surge, flooding rains, big concerns, along with the wind, of course. So far, just 3% of Georgia's cotton crop, so depending on where that storm tracks, has been picked. Jeez. Nationally, the cotton crop stands at 15% completed. You were talking about crop progress. USDA releasing their new report on Monday. 12% of the nation's corn has now been harvested. It's a couple of points behind the five-year average, not too far off. About 8% of soybeans are now cut, 5 points off the five-year average. Minnesota, a full 12 points off that five-year average, Chip.
Yeah, Georgia, I believe, number two cotton producer in the
country.
Correct. So, yeah, we need to watch it very closely. Cotton is actually trading to the upside today after just, it's just been a washout trade for days in cotton.
Well, North Carolina also at risk, and North Carolina not very far along either. You mentioned temperatures turning cooler. You need to prepare for higher heating bills. Families are expected to pay an average of 17% more to heat homes this winter than last. That's according to the National Energy Assistance Directors Association. Those that heat with natural gas facing the highest increase of more than 34%. Heating oil expected to increase 13% with the average cost of more than $2,100. Electric heat, a 7% increase. Chip, this is interesting. First-time applications for low-income home energy assistance, they're up 60%.
Yeah. And I would expect that number is going to climb. Even propane, Clinton, I mean,
right.
a year ago it was just, call it a buck. A year ago, this year it's like a buck 35.
A couple other quick things real quick right here. Crude oil now trading below $80 a barrel, lowest level since January. Lumber prices now at their lowest levels in more than 2 years. Of course, with a hurricane hitting Florida, that could change. The text of a stopgap funding bill was released late Monday. It would keep the government running through December 16th. That legislation facing some hurdles to avoid a government shutdown this weekend. So we'll have to see what happens. There's a vote tonight in the Senate.
Right. Good stuff, Clinton. Thank you so much, buddy.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, that is Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hey, Chip. How are you?
Doing real fine. We've only got a week left before the World Dairy Expo in Madison. Are you ready to make your way to Madison?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like a big dairy reunion, and AgriTalk included. So we're looking forward to it. But as you know, and I talked to you about this, there are some things that have changed, like a new schedule. So it'll now span 6 days, Sunday through Friday. The trade show now runs Tuesday through Friday. Cow show runs all week. And it's kind of a lot to wrap our heads around because, there's a long history at Expo and it's always been one way. So I would just encourage people to download the World Dairy Expo app to make sure that when they come, they get to see what they want to come to see. But there's a lot of things included again this year, the career connections. I think it's a really cool thing. It introduces businesses and farms to students and young professionals in search of positions in the dairy industry. Everybody's looking for help. So if you're interested, which most people probably are, register at worlddairyexpo.com. Education, Chip, it's a main focus there. And that Expo Espanol is back again, presented in Spanish for the dairy owners, the managers, the mid-managers. But in addition to AgriTalk being there, we're also excited that the U.S. Farm Report will go live by our own Tyne Morgan on Thursday, October 6th from 8 to 9. And that show will have an amazing panel of experts focused on markets, news, and trends. It really is something that people want to grab a seat and watch and listen
Excellent.
To. So, yeah, I'd say everybody needs to make their way to World Dairy Expo. I always come home, honestly, Chip, really exhausted, but exhausted
right.
in a good way because I ran into so many people.
That's right.
Exhausted in a good way. So, yes, I'm looking forward
Karen,
to it.
Karen, thank you so much. We'll see you up there. I'll be at the DMI booth on October 4th. All right, we've got Mike Steenhook coming up next here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your cattle operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis is gone this morning. He'll actually be back with us this afternoon. All right. There's some issues on the Mississippi River that we need to talk about. And nobody better than Mike Steenhook, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I am doing fine, Chip. Good to be with you.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here. Actually, you know what? I'm not all that glad that you're with us to talk about this, because normally when you're on, we're talking about, hey, listen, we've got some funding for a project here, a project there. This time it's an issue that's creating some real problems for us as we head into fall, and it's the low water levels on the Mississippi. What kind of disruptions is this causing now?
Well, I'm glad to always be your wet blanket, Chip. this is something that, you know, a lot of information has been circulated about the rail issue and all of that. But something that has been under the radar screen is the low water conditions on the inland waterway system. And it's particularly acute on the lower stretches of the Mississippi River. Once you get south of Cairo, Illinois, and that takes you all the way down eventually to the Gulf of Mexico, barge companies are having to restrict the amount of weight that they're, and the amount of freight that they're putting in barges. And so there's a weight issue, a water depth issue, but there's also a water width issue. And so obviously when there's less water in a river, that will narrow the shipping channel. And so therefore you actually have to restrict the size of those barge flotillas or tows. I'm hearing reports of 12 to 15% reduction in the tow sizes as well as having to restrict the amount of freight you're loading. So that it's obviously unwelcome news. We need to have our supply chain operating at full throttle, and that's clearly not happening on the inland waterway system.
Yeah. Mike, when you mentioned the width of the river, I flashed to a corner just north of the Lock and Dam in Guttenberg, Iowa. When we were looking at water levels at Guttenberg in the 8 to 9 foot range, loaded barges were running aground on that corner with 8 or 9 foot of water. We're down to 4.7 foot of water up at Guttenberg. There's no way that they are carrying a full load on the mid Mississippi.
And then the question therefore is, at what point do they come to the it's no longer worth it conclusion?
Right.
There's a certain amount that you need to have per barge. I mean, you can light load, but there is this kind of threshold that you have to determine at what point it's not worth it. The economics no longer are favorable. And then of course you've got other modes of transportation that are challenged. Yep. As well. But you know, for every foot of water depth, that doesn't seem like a lot, but every foot of water depth you have less of, that's the equivalent of 5,000 fewer bushels that you're loading in a barge, which is about, you're getting close to 1/10 of the freight capacity of that barge. So it really is significant.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you look at what's happened to barge rates on the Mississippi, they're up like 200% from where they were, 30 days ago? And that's all the result of being able to carry less per barge, right?
Yeah. And so if you have a given amount of freight and all of a sudden you're going to have to, just to use round numbers, if all of a sudden you're going to have to accommodate that using 20 trips versus 15 trips,
yep,
that's going to put upward pressure on rates. And, you know, we're already operating in a pretty high rate environment right now. And just, it's another thing that's kind of chipping away at the profitability of agriculture. And it's just it's another lesson of how supply chains can either be a facilitator of agricultural profitability or an obstacle to it. And right now we're seeing it being an obstacle to profitability.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Now the reason is obvious. Okay. I get it. It's just a lack of rainfall in the northern Midwest for the most part. But could the Corps have done anything differently to manage the water level on the Mississippi to keep this thing flowing and more operational for the barges?
Yeah, you know, I'm hearing, you know, that the Corps actually has done a decent amount, you know, both last year and this year on some preventative dredging to make sure that shipping is allowed to proceed. You know, obviously you can always do better, but you know, that's something that they've actually done a pretty good job of. You know, fortunately, a number of years ago, there was an issue of these granite rock pinnacles that were south of St. Louis that would, due to a low water event, these pinnacles emerge. And so we actually had to, the Corps of Engineers had to blast those. And we were very happy that that occurred because we would have some, it would only exacerbate the problem. But you know, I think overall the Corps has done a pretty good job, but it really underscores the point that we have to do a good job of getting ahead of these things. You know, the best time to react to a challenge is before the challenge, not after the challenge. And so we obviously need to keep underscoring that and doing a better job of that.
Yep. And Mike, the timing on this, I mean, it really couldn't be worse, could it? I mean, what kind of stress is this going to put on the other modes of transportation?
It's going to be significant. You know, there is no not a margin for error. It's not like we have all of these available rail cars that are just sitting in a shed just waiting to be deployed. We have this abundance of capacity. We do not. Our rail infrastructure has been overly subscribed. Reliability of service has been pretty problematic. Even, you know, taking out of consideration the whole contract dispute, rail service has been a real challenge. So we already have and of course, we all have seen the headlines for the last 2 years about the supply chain being under significant stress. So this is kind of the backstop to all of this. And so now all of a sudden you've got a weather-induced situation with the inland waterway system. It's just making it all the more challenging. And, you know, the good news is we've got a pretty decent harvest and, you know, getting ready to come online, and we need to have that transportation system that can accommodate it.
Yep. Okay. I think about shipping issues mid Mississippi. Is this creating any significant problems down at the loading facilities down in NOLA?
Yeah, it's a real concern for everyone. And so it's just, you know, all of a sudden if you're the export terminal, would you rather accommodate X many million bushels of soybeans or grain, you know, just again, having to do it with 15 barges or 20 barges? Well, that every time you have to have 15, more assets deployed to transport a given amount of freight, it further taxes your logistics system. It adds cost to it. It really throws a wrench into the whole process.
Okay. All right. Any update on the union votes to ratify the labor agreement with the railways?
Yeah, the next step is all of these rank and file members are going to be voting to ratify, or I guess to reject, that tentative agreement that was arrived at a little over a week ago. The two big unions that represent over half of the unionized workforce, the ones that are really the most influential, they're going to start in about mid-October to send out ballots with an expectation that the ballots will be tallied in mid-November. So that would be after the midterm election. There still is a lot of frustration among rank and file members with the tentative agreement. You know, we'll obviously see what happens when the votes are actually tallied. It'll be interesting to see how much politics and the results of the midterm election influence what the two parties, the railroads and the railroad unions, do next. How much to dig in and insist on more, or do they agree to the terms of that tentative agreement? So that's something that we'll really be watching over the course of these next, you know, 6 weeks.
Has there been any sign that maybe the workers are slowing things down on the rails at all?
I haven't seen evidence of that.
Okay, good.
You know, again, the overall situation is we've got slow rail service, unreliable rail service. So,
yeah,
but I haven't seen anything in addition to a system that's already under stress.
Okay, very good. Real quickly, Mike, anything else on your radar?
Well, it's just, you know, it impacts trucking, you know, seeing these higher fuel prices and diesel prices, that adds further stress to it. So, you know, again, we've got the good news is that the American farmer can grow a good crop. We've got good demand for it, but we've got our multimodal transportation system that is really struggling right now. And it's going to have an impact on our ability to get product from point A to point B.
Yeah. And boy, talking about those fuel costs, we're going to continue to watch the track of Ian, but it looks like it's going to stay away from the refiners down in Texas and Louisiana. So should be okay on that front. Mike, it's always good to talk with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That's Mike Steenhook. He is the executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition. All right. Brent Johnson is the president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. We're going to get to know Brent coming up next here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, is it any coincidence that we've got crude oil $2.50 higher today and we've got the grain markets higher?
No, they're very much tied together, Chip. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about it yesterday with the outside markets just being highly damaging to the grain and soy markets. You know, we've reversed and the dollar's lower and crude oil is sharply higher. And as a result, we're seeing a reversal of price action in the grain and soy complex. The exception to that is soy meal, which is slightly lower. So watch that one pretty closely. See if soybeans continue to track higher, or if the meal market extends its losses. They're just minor at the moment, but if they extend those losses, then the potential, I suppose, to pull soybeans lower into the close, or at least off their highs.
Yeah. Yeah. The wheat market seems to be leading this move to the upside. Any reason for that?
Wheat is just extremely volatile right now. And so it, you know, the volume isn't all that great this morning. So we're seeing relatively low volume and yet big volatility. And so I anticipate that will probably remain the case here short term.
Gotcha. Boy, the sellers stay in control in the hogs, don't they?
Oh, just, you know, taking them out behind the woodshed, the bulls out behind the woodshed here. Yesterday's price action was highly damaging. A downside breakout from the extended months-long broad sideways range. And we tried to work higher initially this morning, but boy, that just didn't last long. And now we're seeing moderate to heavy selling pressure in most of those contracts. That's spilling over into cattle as well, with live cattle and feeder cattle both under pressure.
Good stuff, Brian. Thanks. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us this morning. Brent Johnson is the president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation, and he joins us right now. Brent, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I'm very good. How are you?
Doing real fine, real fine. You were elected back in January of this year, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. At our annual meeting in December, our voting delegates elected a new president, as former President Craig Hill announced his. They chose me as their next choice to be the 14th president of the Iowa Farm Bureau.
Well, congratulations for that. Let's get to know you a little bit, Brent. Where are you from? Yeah. Tell us about your operation.
Yep. So home for me is a small town in Calhoun County called Manson, and I'm a fifth generation farmer there. Our operation currently consists of corn and soybeans. In the past, we have had a cow-calf operation. I did start an independent crop consulting business where I've dealt with soil fertility, precision agriculture, and been a certified crop advisor for about 24 years. And as that opportunity found its way, this one opened up, and absolutely thrilled to serve our members in this capacity.
Okay, that was going to be my next question for you, Brent. Why? Why did you decide to run for Farm Bureau President?
Well, that journey started a long time ago, actually, when I was still qualified as a young farmer. I was on the State Young Farmer Advisory Committee, and my third year in that capacity, my peers elected me as chairman. And the opportunities as chairman of the State Young Farmer Advisory Committee is to sit in on the state board room meetings four times in that calendar year. And it really made a huge impact to me, and it really impressed me to get to know the leadership of this organization, the reach and the impact that the Iowa Farm Bureau has in agriculture, not only within our state's borders, but across the entire country. And I made it a goal at that time that someday I wanted to serve this organization as a member of the board, and got that opportunity several years ago. And now that the opportunity to serve as president is here, and absolutely thrilled to do it.
Excellent. Excellent. So what do you see as your primary responsibility to the membership?
Well, the president of this organization, there's several things, but the primary thing that I take very seriously is to be the voice of all of our members. We are a policy organization, so, you know, a lot of work in Des Moines, a lot of work in Washington, D.C., and wherever those decision makers are trying to impact agriculture, those are the places that I need to be to represent our members.
Gotcha. Good stuff. Good stuff. Talk to me about the Taiwanese trade delegation that was recently in Iowa. Didn't they sign an agreement to buy some corn and beans?
Yeah, they did. That was just last week. I was there to witness that. That was absolutely fantastic. You know, Governor Reynolds and Secretary Nag. These are things that I've talked with them in the last few weeks, honestly, as the federal government is failing to continue trade opportunities with other countries. What can we do as a state to cultivate some of those things for our producers across the state? And this agreement with Taiwan, I mean, it was a $2.6 billion trade agreement for corn and soybeans over the next couple of years. And it was fantastic to have them at bouncing all over the central Iowa, and look forward to working with them more in the future.
That's fantastic. I love to hear your focus on trade, because you're absolutely right. At the federal level, you know, why are we talking more about getting involved in the TPP, and I think we're going to talk with Terry Walters about that next, but what's your stance on that, the old TPP?
Yeah, well, you know, any of those multilateral trade agreements, anytime that we can open up our opportunities to trade with other countries, you know, I think we need to be there. We need to be in those conversations and make sure that Iowa agriculture is properly represented.
Excellent. All right. So, certified crop advisor, what's your take? Yep. on the big push from USDA on the climate smart farming funding and programs that are coming from USDA?
Yeah, well, you know, that's we all know. I mean, this is a growing conversation, and you know, there are those opportunities for those farms to capitalize into some of those things, and if they can find those opportunities and they want to navigate those spaces, by all means, have at it. Where I get in my role, mm-hmm. to be careful in that conversation, you know, I want to make sure that those opportunities don't turn into liabilities for our producers, and where those liabilities then become, you know, obligations and some of those other things in the future that could actually impact agriculture negatively. So as far as the climate smart conversations goes, we want to make sure that remains market driven. You know, we do need the USDA to maybe put some framework around it, so we all know the rules that we're going to engage here in the future.
Perfect.
But to be open in the marketplace and to make sure that that's an opportunity for producers and they can have that voluntary aspect to participate in those is very important to this organization.
Framework and structure. Boy, though, you absolutely nailed my take on what USDA's role should be in the development of these markets. Let the free enterprise drive the value, and because as soon as government gets involved in this, as they are to the tune of what, $2.8 billion, Brent, that has the potential of influencing the development of these markets, and anytime that the government's going to influence it, it's going to put a cap on it, is my concern. So
absolutely. Yep. No.
Okay.
No, you know, it's going to drive some of those things in places that doesn't always work for producers. I mean, there's such a colorful array of agriculture practices that's across this entire country. And each individual producer needs to identify those places that they can play in that space if they choose to do so. And just simply having framework in the USDA is all they need to do to provide that opportunity to let the marketplace determine which independent producer needs to play there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Hey, EPA decision yesterday to delay the final rule on glyphosate to 2026. That certainly, it seems like good news because producers can continue to use glyphosate until 2026. But does it concern you that they're going to take 4 years to think about it?
Well, concern, there's always concern with the EPA. And actually, over the last several months, we've talked with the EPA on multiple occasions in person. On a wide variety of topics, and chemistry labels as a general umbrella has certainly been towards the top of that list, and this most recent ruling by the EPA as it relates to glyphosate, I mean, we the Iowa Farm Bureau, we strongly agree with the EPA on this one, that, you know, the glyphosate as a chemistry, it has been proven over multiple worldwide pesticide regulating companies, including the EPA, that glyphosate is non-carcinogenic. And so to make sure that chemistry, that tool remains in place for farmers to utilize is highly important. And, you know, as far as the EPA is concerned, they should make sure that this chemistry is available to Iowa and U.S. producers, because it's a key part to conservation practices and the things that we're doing, you know, as far as cover crops, no-till, you know, there's a lot of very, very good environmental benefits that are in place today because of the chemistry that we have. And if we remove those tools, you're going to force us back into broad acre tillage and some of those things that really a lot of producers don't want to revisit.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. It's National Clean Energy Week in D.C. Could biofuels get some good news from EPA this week?
Well, I sure hope so. Like I said, that's, again, the EPA, that's another one of these topics that we've been talking with them on, you know, biofuels and clean fuel, those kinds of things. You know, the Iowa, as you know, is the number one biofuel producer in the entire country. We've got 43 ethanol plants, 11 biodiesel plants. We've got soybean crush facilities that are coming online not only this year but next year as well. And we've got about 48,000 jobs in Iowa that are attributed to the renewable fuels arena. So if the EPA can find a way to increase our renewable fuels, that's just a fantastic win for Iowa agriculture, Iowa small town communities across this entire state.
Excellent. Excellent. You going to be in Iowa City this weekend, Brent?
Well, as we speak, I'm on my way right now to do a little pregame work ahead of Saturday. But yes, absolutely, I will be at the A&F game for Iowa Hawkeyes versus Michigan.
Excellent. Excellent. Man, I look forward to having you back on. There's a lot of issues that we need to talk about here on AgriTalk with you. And watch your email. It's going to be lighting up here soon to get you back on, okay?
I appreciate any opportunity to share some thoughts with you and your audience, Chip.
Excellent. That is Brent Johnson. He is the president of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. We're going to have a conversation with Terry Walters next here on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Glad that you are with us this morning. Let's keep the priority conversation going here. Terry Walters is the president of the National Pork Producers Council. He joins us right now. Terry, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Morning, Chip. Always great to be here.
Glad that you are. How are things looking up there in southwest Minnesota this morning?
Little brisk fall weather. We always appreciate the cooling season and the onset of harvest. So we're out in the field and things are rolling.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that things are rolling. We're supposed to will tonight be the first frost of the year for you, or did you get that one last week?
No, this will be the first one for us. Okay. Yeah. So a little bit of a frost forecast. Yeah.
Yeah. Any concern there, or are the crops far enough along for you?
I think we're in pretty good shape here. I think actually it might help the process. So yeah.
It'd be good. Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple of people get to me on Twitter and say, listen, you know, bring the frost. I'm happy to have it. But a few are a little concerned about it, that it could take top end off some of their corn that was late planted. So, all right. Sure. Yep. Sure. Let's get to it here. In the last conversation with Brent, Iowa Farm Bureau Federation president, he brought up the trade agreements. And then right at the top of the list coming out of your fly-in into D.C. for the MPPC, right at the top of the list is the CPTPP. We've got to get this administration reengaged in trade issues, right?
Absolutely. We, 25% of our product, as many people know, is exported. And so we need to have the opportunity to grow our industry and support those countries around the globe. But man, we just need some action to open some new markets, and at least show us a little interest in opening some new markets. So CPTPP would be a great opportunity for us to get engaged.
You know what? It was just TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It was happening in an election year. And at that time, Terry, I don't think that it would have been supported by either the Democrat or the Republican running for office. What is the level of support now in Congress for that group?
Well, I think in general, my understanding, there is pretty good support if we could just get the opportunity to move forward. You know, we've got $8.1 billion worth of pork products that are marketed to over 100 countries around the globe. And it would just be, it adds jobs, it adds support to our industry. We're the most economical country in the world, arguably, right, to produce low-cost, affordable food and share it with the world. And that'd just be a great opportunity to continue that process.
Excellent. Okay. Number two on the list is a labor issue and bringing ag workers, some seasonal ag workers in, as a matter of fact, with the H-2A visa program. What is MPP stand on that?
So we're really looking for, year-round foreign ag workers, not seasonal workers. And then more importantly, we're looking for them to take the cap off. You know, we're limited to 20,000 H-2A visas a year, and 10,000 of those go to dairy, and 10,000 workers just doesn't go very far in today's work environment. So we're supportive of visa reform and ultimately expanding the H-2As to year round and removing the cap. You know, we locate in rural America where there's limited populations, and so we need help in these remote areas.
Yeah. What do you think the odds are of seeing any meaningful action on this?
Well, it sounds like there's, you get glimmers of hope that there is interest in doing it, but it doesn't seem to go anywhere. So I have really mixed feelings about it. I think it's a pretty straightforward ask to expand the limits.
Yeah.
And if we can get people in legally to do the work, I struggle seeing what the problem is.
Gotcha. Okay. Biosecurity. NPPC is looking to support the Beagle Brigade Act. This is a really cool effort and a very necessary effort, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's key to protecting our borders. Those dogs and canines are extremely well trained. They have the ability to do and detect ag products, not just meat, but fruit, vegetables, other things that are being illegally brought into the country. They have the ability to do it like no human or machine can do it. So let's get them on board. The NPPC has urged Congress to appropriate the funding and get that custom borders program fully staffed and engaged, because it's a great tool. They'll work 7 days a week, Chip. They're canines. I've got dogs. They love to do their job. They need a job. They love their job.
So, and Terry, it's been proven that it works. So why not support it?
Absolutely,
and fully expand it. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. So they're not worried about holidays and weekends.
No, they
love the opportunity to go to work.
Yep, that's right. There's other biosecurity issues that NPPC is supporting as well, whether it be the National Annual Vaccine and Veterinarian Countermeasures Bank. There's a long list, but most of the biosecurity issues are on it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're in the beginning stages of the Farm Bill. We want to continue to get funding for foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. We want to support our national animal health laboratories. And those are key elements that are going to help support and protect the livestock industry in this country. So it's very, very important we keep that going. And then the other part we're adding to the Farm Bill ask this year is we're looking for a catastrophic insurance program for livestock as a consideration, which, with the threat of ASF as close as it's ever been in 50 years now, it certainly is up for consideration in the Farm Bill.
All right. 10 seconds. How was Bacon Fest?
Well, Bacon Fest was awesome. It was a first of a first because they managed to set the fire alarm off in the Library of Congress building, and we had to evacuate the entire building. So we did 2 Bacon Fests in one night, Skip. Skip,
sorry. Oh, that's hilarious. Terry, thank you so much. We got to go, but I want to hear more about that later. Come back this afternoon, Steve Georgie.